Amory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timmery.
You may be a little young to remember this, Timmery, but are you aware of the whole Bill Clinton scandals of the late 1990s, where he was accused, quite credibly, many people thought, of various forms of sexual abuse? You're somewhat familiar with the story?
I do remember.
People like Juanita Broderick and Paula Jones and all of them came out. And it was interesting at the time that there was very clear two sides on this issue, right? You had the conservatives that said, you need to have character to be in office. In fact, we came out with books like When Character Was King. I remember Peggy Noonan, a columnist from the Wall Street Journal, one of my favorite biographer of Pope John Paul II, really good writer. She came out with that talking about Reagan, When Character Was King. And you looked at all the polls and it was something about 80% of Christians, at least evangelicals. I guess I wasn't really paying attention to Catholics at the time, but it seems like conservative evangelicals and conservative Catholics politically, they go along similar lines. And about 80-90% said, is character important in our leaders? And about 80-90% said, yes, character is important. All right. And one of the more interesting things that happened at the time was that Gloria Steinem, who is, of course, this feminist icon, came out in 1998 with an article in the New York Times, an op-ed piece defending Bill Clinton.
Oh, dear.
Yes.
She didn't.
She did. And she basically, to use the term that was applied at the time, she slut-shamed these women. She gender-shamed them. She said they're a bunch of liars. We support Clinton. Now, interestingly, just this week, and I believe it's that very same New York Times, a piece came out and said, you know what? We may have been a little bit wrong about the whole Bill Clinton thing.
Yeah,
it's time for a reckoning, I believe was their phrase, actually. Yes, maybe we should not have jumped to conclusions. Maybe we should have demanded a little bit more character.
You think?
In our leaders.
Well, and you know what? This is crazy to me, Don, that anyone would even have a slut-shaming type of response to sexual abuse or whatever it might be. You know, I just spent the weekend with over 700 youth speaking to them about chastity and sexuality. And one of the young people, I had a number of them coming up and asking questions one-on-one after, because they themselves are trapped sometimes in sexually abusive relationships or just their own sexual addiction. And even in those cases where they're addicted to some form of sexuality, whether it's just looking at pornography or whether it is just the act in and of itself, they often want out or they're searching for something. And so should we just begin to slut shame in that moment? No.
Of course not, right? And you would think there's certain organizations out there that you think when a woman comes and says, I have been abused, a man has used his power against me. There are certain organizations that you look to and you say, yeah, you should be on the side of the woman. And that was what was so striking about that Gloria Steinem piece. You would think that this feminist icon, right? This woman who's supposed to be on the side of women would be on the side of those women. She was not. And since that time, that was a real turning point. But I think in many people, they looked at the feminist movement in this country and they said, you know what? You're actually not necessarily on the side of women. You're on the side of power.
Right.
When it comes to a decision between taking power and being on the side of a particular woman who may or may not have been abused, but at least we're going to find out, you took the side of power and you took the side of an abuser against that woman. And so what that means is everything you say from now on, I'm going to know that actually you don't hold to principles. Your only principle is I want power. That's your principle. Right. I say all of that, Timmery, all of that to set up this next story, because, you know, I just mentioned that conservative Christians in the 90s were the most likely to agree with the statement, our leaders should have high character. Mm-hmm. Now, in a poll just taken in the last few months, conservative Christians in this country are now the least likely to agree with that statement. Now, it's about 20%. of them that say our leaders should have high character. Why do we think that is? Let me give you one story from this last week that I find on one hand so sad, disgusting, it irritates me, it makes me angry. So Roy Moore is a judge, at least he was a judge in Alabama, who is currently running for Senate. If you follow the national politics, it was a bit of a surprise win. He won his primary against a more mainstream conservative. This guy's a bit of a firebrand. You know, he's that guy that defended the Ten Commandments monument a few years ago and that sort of thing, right? Well, Roy Moore is running for Senate, and this week, several women, and I'm going to say credibly because I think they are credible, actually, several women came out with very similar stories. It seems that when Roy Moore was a DA back in his 30s, he liked to go and troll for young ladies. And when I say young, I mean 14, 15, 16, teenagers. He liked teenage girls. And several of them...
I'm just going to throw this out. Yeah, and so did Ted Bundy, okay?
Listen, the response to this story has been, like I said, it makes me mad just thinking about it. But you know what? Feel free to leave your comments, because I know some people already who are listening to this say, oh, but. Okay, let's finish out the story. He was actually banned from one of the local shopping malls in the 70s because so many of the young women made complaints about him, okay? So he's trolling for women, and several of them say he sexually molested me. Okay, now, what has been the response from too large a portion of the Christian community, not only in Alabama, but nationally? Oh, those women, I mean, you know, they were asking for it. And sometimes to this person's everlasting shame, sometimes they've actually even appealed to the Bible to defend Roy Moore. I was just reading this. The one guy who actually holds public office, I don't see his name in front of me, but he only said, well, you know, what about Joseph and Mary? I mean, Joseph was an adult carpenter and Mary was a teenager. I mean, it's okay. It makes me want to pull my hair out, Tim. Like, you, sir, are blaspheming and you are drawing people away from Jesus. And to me, this is the whole ball game right here, right now.
Right.
When you defend this, when you are not on the side of the women in this case, and I'll throw out there, I mean, I don't even want to make a caveat in this story because it makes it sound like I'll make caveats in any sexual molestation story. I know of stories where people have lied about and they've destroyed men's lives with false claims. I get it. The Duke lacrosse team was actually a pretty good example. Like, that was actually a big fabricated thing. But even personally, I know personally men whose lives have been destroyed. So I'm not a person who just automatically, like, okay, of course, you know, that woman is telling the truth. But in this case, they do seem credible. And whether or not they turn out to be, and I think they will turn out to be, we just went through the whole Weinstein thing and all of these Hollywood. We just talked about that last week.
And it's so hypocritical that you're willing to point out one man's fault because maybe he's in Hollywood promoting something you don't agree with, yet you're willing to cover up and make excuses for another individual's. The reality is that sexual abuse is sexual abuse. It doesn't matter who is participating in it, whether it's a teenager, an adult, an older individual, that is sexual abuse.
It is. And if you're not on the side of the woman in that case, you are disavowing Jesus.
Right.
That's the bottom line. I'm thinking of his name now, a different Moore. He's head of the Southern Baptist Convention. I want to say Russell Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Came out with a very good statement. He's like, if you don't see that the poor and the oppressed and women and children in particular, in this case, when it comes to sexuality, sometimes guys, we get it, right, but a lot of times it's women and children. You are doing a disservice to the gospel. And you know what? That's been my whole point. Frankly, I've been talking about this, Timur, even before we started our show together. I spent a lot of time on the radio saying, when it comes to politics, Christians need to be very careful about choosing power over principle, because you will ultimately turn people away from Jesus because they'll look at you. I mean, now when I look at a guy like Jerry Falwell Jr., frankly, from Liberty University, who came out in support, unequivocally, I'm going to support this the judge. Am I going to listen to anything you have to say about Jesus after this? I'm not. I'm sorry. In the same way that I didn't listen to Gloria Steinem anymore after she showed that she could be bought by power.
Right.
These Christians are showing that they can be bought by power. I'm sorry that you are taking the power, I don't listen to a lot of other talk radio. I was just listening to one just to check it out, and I only could last about 30 seconds because here was the line the guy said. And this is a well-respected talk guy. I like him, but he said, you know what? It doesn't matter to me. I'll take the position. I'll take the Senate seat over principle, because I think that, you know, the other side is, no, I'm sorry.
That's why
we can't.
That is exactly why we have gotten to the place that we have. And it is so frustrating because we've seen it in the church. We've seen it in Hollywood. We've seen it in our politicians, that unfortunately, with great power, we've seen also the impact of sexuality within the midst of that. And unfortunately, the breaking up of many marriages, marital infidelity, sexual abuse cases. And at what point are we going to say, okay, it's enough, that truly principle and deep values do come first? And that's why a lot of the time the faith is what helps to have that underground base to build up those virtues. And, you know, that's why we're talking about the sexual moral issues so often, is because the church has a response to human sexuality, because there is an inherent dignity to who you are. You have intellect and you have free will. And those two things allow you to love sacrificially. And you know what? That's something that you can exert in whatever profession you're in, whether you're a politician, whether you're in Hollywood, whether you're home with your children, whether it's the intimacy between a husband and wife. You know, the intimacy between a boyfriend and girlfriend, that they recognize that the other person comes first, and I'm willing to sacrifice what I want for what is good, because I have the ability to actually control myself.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending. With Don and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Just to build on what you were saying before the break, Timmery, we've been discussing the Roy Moore issue and sexual immorality, and I think hypocrisy in many right. cases. It seems like in the culture, there's a large group of people on either side who look at the person that is accused of sexual immorality and they say, oh, well, is that guy supposed to be on my team or not? And if he isn't on my team, okay, I'm going to believe the woman. And if he is on my team, oh, I'm not going to believe the woman, or I'm going to try to excuse it or something. And I almost get that in some ways. Like if you're not a Christian and you're out there and you're like, well, listen, it's all about power anyway, you know, like, okay, I kind of get that you will sacrifice to gain power if you're just sort of a Machiavellian person who believes that power is the end game. Yeah, you know, you accept that, you know, sometimes we're going to lie about this. But as a Christian, though, you can't do that. As a Christian, principle must come first, and principle must come over power. And what you were saying, Timmery, before the break about building character, and ultimately, I think that all leads to this is about eternal life. Like, our souls are on the line here. Like, you're not just talking about that woman who we should be talking about, right, who has been abused. And those many women who have been abused, those are people that have eternal souls that we need to be care about. Roy Moore is a person who has an eternal soul that we need to be a care of. What is he thinking about all of these Christians who are saying, yeah, good job, Roy, you know, keep that up? What about what we are saying to the culture about their eternal souls, right? Like, shouldn't we be most concerned about people's eternal destiny and whether or not they are building character? Mm-hmm. Character is destiny, right? Like, the reason we are on this planet is to become certain kinds of people who can live with God forever in heaven, like the beatific vision, like we talked about last week. Like, that's the goal. That's the end game. And by sloughing off or excusing sexual immorality, we are taking people away from the beatific vision, and we are clouding it for many, many others. And that's got to be our priority, I think, in some of these issues. Not so much, yes, maybe, you know what, maybe to hold on to our principle, Christians lose a little bit of political power in this country. I'm okay with that. I know that a lot of people are scared about that. It seems to be the main thing. We're all scared. Oh, we got to have the power. I'm not going to sacrifice principle for power. That's not going to end up well, because what you end up with is a bunch of people who don't have principle then, because they've given it away.
And I think that over the last, you know, 10 years or so, we've seen tremendous challenges to the dignity of the person, both on the issue of abortion And again, continued access to it, continued access to sterilization of men and women, continued access to contraception for free, you know, no matter what. And now this confusion over gender ideology, you know, I don't know what I am, up or down, I don't know which direction is which. You know, you see at the heart of this, people are searching, but as access has been given and you've seen continued essentially decline in virtue, decline in principle, you've seen a lot of people who see that and are choosing to run in the opposite direction. I think when we hit a point where unfortunately we are tried, when we are facing kind of the bottom, we are challenged in those moments, even if that's our leadership. And that's where I think people are putting too much of an emphasis at times on who is that person standing over me rather than who am I at this moment. And this is where, you know, you see the crisis of young adults. You see, you know, the quarter life crisis, you know, the earlier than usual midlife crisis, the, you know, women and men in their 30s saying, I don't know what's going on right now. And I was just, you know, this conference this weekend, we had a huge event with the young adults. And one of the questions at the end, you know, these young adults were hanging out for hours after asking question after question. And a lot of them had to do with, you know, what about, you know, I'm studying in my psychology classes, I'm studying in these sexual ethics classes, and sexuality is being pushed down their throats. You know, what's the response? You know, they make it sound so great and fun. And I know that's not true. But the reality is that people are not, they may enjoy themselves in the moment, but they are not happy. They are still searching for something that will fulfill them.
One of the things we could do to that very question, so what are we supposed to do? We could say, go to church. Of course you should do that. But here's another little alternative, what you could say. You could say, look at the science. Right.
Oh, like, yeah.
Actually, let's just look at the science. Maybe you're not to the point where you're willing to darken the door of a church. If
right.
you are, please come with me. Please check it out. But even if you are not, let's just look at the science. Tamari, we've got several stories in a row just from this week about various studies that have come out touching on various aspects of morality. Right. A lot of it has to do with sex, but not necessarily. And it's interesting that each one of these supports a traditional Catholic understanding of life, marriage, sex, all of this stuff, right? Even money. Let's actually just start with this one real quick. Here's a story from the week about a young woman who, against, frankly, the cultural message, had a baby when she was 22. Culturally, that's still pretty young, right? To be
right.
having a baby.
It is young too.
Now, I mean, traditionally that's getting older, but, and she says, what having a baby at 22 taught me about money? She says, when we had a kid, when we were 22, I wasn't the most financially responsible person in the world. I had a lot of debt, you know, we're going to school, all this stuff. And having a child, frankly, put me in even deeper debt. But this also taught me a lot of, and here's the key word, responsibility, she okay. says. And I'm just thinking, and she, we can go through some of her points. We don't have to spend a long time on the story, I don't think. But it just struck me as I saw this story, like, she became a parent. And parenting matured her. Do you think she's in a worse off state now that she can actually handle her money a little bit better and she's not wasting it on frivolous things and
right.
all of those things that went along with having a kid? Like, oh, do we actually need that? No. Right?
Right.
Do I plan ahead a little bit?
Well,
yes.
And that's what she talks about. She talks about how, sure, maybe my cost of living would have stayed lower, but essentially my financial literacy has ultimately changed and it's made her a better person in the sense that, you know, she's prepared ahead in advance, you know, and I think that we could take her principles that she's now taken to money into our morality, essentially. She says it pays to be prepared, you know, having that financial emergency fund. She said, you know, I used to take it as a joke, but essentially it's important. And, you know, we just read the readings this past weekend about, you know, the Virgin
right.
on
being
Saturday
prepared, yeah.
and being prepared.
Yep.
And that preparation is important. You know, the other virgins who didn't have the oil in their lamps, that wasn't just oil that we're talking about. We're talking about a lifestyle of repetitive, habitual behavior that is good or it is bad. Will you repetitively be prepared for what you're about to face? You know, and she says, think ahead. Thinking ahead is key. She said, smarter purchases. You know, babies outgrow things. Do I really need everything for my child? Or can I keep it simple and just, you know, enjoy life in the simplicity of what we need, not what we think we have to have sometimes?
Yeah, so I think this is a good example of how parenting matures, obviously, but it's also a good lesson because we've talked before on the show, Timri, about how young men, let's just say, are not maturing as fast as they used to, and that women in their mid-20s and even in their 30s are looking around and saying, huh, there's not a lot of eligible guys right. here that I really want to pursue a relationship with. What the millennial generation, I think we can all agree in general, it's a bit of a stereotype, but in general, yeah, we're kind of maturing, you know, a little bit later. Could it be that it's because we have abandoned the whole idea that I'm going to be a parent and I'm going to become responsible for somebody else right. and I'm going to be committed to that person. I mean, that's what parenting is. That's one of the reasons that God makes us parents, is to help us become the kind of person we're supposed to be. And when we abandon that role, we don't fulfill ourselves the way we should.
Well, and I think this is an evangelization moment because it's that attitude that St. John Paul the Great talked about in Love and Responsibility. Essentially, when you have a true person before you, you're tasked with the responsibility of that individual. Now, that might be an intimate relationship, a friendship, or maybe even having a child. But in general, I see the way that we're willing to dialogue online and over text messaging, and the things that we are able to say and not able to say, and how when you actually meet with a person one-on-one, how your engagements actually really do change. You know, I was, we had this huge conference and we were talking with the youth parents on Saturday night. And it was interesting because they had, one keynote in Spanish and one keynote in English. And I guess one of the parents had come out and she was really upset and approached one of the one of the sisters that helped to organize the conference. And, this woman was living in a same-sex relationship. She was having her kids catechized through the church still. But she came out and said, they are so hateful what they're teaching about, people who have different types of love, and is very upset. And it was interesting because she's faced with this nun, and the nun came and told me that. She goes, Timri, I was so scared. I didn't know what to say. I'm going, oh Lord, help me. And you know what was so simple was the fact that sister sat there and listened to this woman and said, I hear what you're saying, essentially. I'm summarizing it. It was an hour long conversation, but she heard what she was saying and said, the church is offering this. And just affirmed what the church was offering, but also affirmed her as a person, and acknowledging not that what she's saying is correct, but that she herself has a perspective and thoughts that she's trying to share. And sometimes I think that we're not even able to have those conversations because we're not being heard. And, when you throw something up on social media and you're saying, oh, yeah, here's my thought. It's not actually being received by another person. And I think that's where this attitude of responsibility can play into every conversation we have, but so often we're willing to just ignore the person and move past it so quickly.
Yeah, right. If you don't have the face-to-face conversation, if you don't have the face-to-face interaction, those relationships, it is much more difficult, and it's much more likely that you won't take responsibility for another person. I suspect if that woman had just emailed or posted a Facebook rant about the conference,
exactly.
She may not have got the same response that the sister was able to give her, right? And I think in our day-to-day life, that's so often the case, that when you enter into a face-to-face relationship, which frankly is what things like marriage do, right? And they change you, and they change the other person, and they mature us all. And so, yeah, we need a little bit more of that personal interaction. Absolutely.
Timri and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timri. That's TIMMERIE and at Don Johnson Media. This is Trending with Don and Timri on Relevant Radio. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timri Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timri.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
One of those things we often talk about here on Trending is that today young men in particular are being bombarded with pornography on their phones. You know, you just tap the search on Instagram and vast majority of the time, somehow they found some way to bring in some form of pornography onto your phone. You know, even I was telling someone recently, I don't even search on my Instagram account because I know that sometimes just things are going to filter in there often that I don't want to see. And, you know, it used to be clean for forever. And now they're trying to implement like dancer pornography every now and again into my search feed. And I don't even look for anything like that. But here too, we've talked a lot about how there are so many ads now for hormonal contraception for teenagers and young adults. But now I think a lot of people aren't recognizing that there are so many programs, for example, like the Pill Club, and also another one I recently heard about, which is NERCS. And NERCS is an app where teenagers can have access to birth control for free, no parent involvement. They're not meeting with a medical professional. And this is a scary part, Don. There's no medical guidance and follow-up long-term with these kids. So they're being given synthetic forms of estrogen and progesterone that are so damaging for the body, not to even mention, you know, in that moment, the impact of that child being taught over and over again that my body is an object to be used and that who I am is basically valued on what I'm able to give sexually and intimately to another individual. And these teens are being exposed constantly by Planned Parenthood to what is a total lie in terms of who they are.
It really is lie based upon lie based upon lie. As I look at this story, so that just to make it clear, so that you have the app on your phone, you just press it, fill in your address, no parental consent, no nothing. Right. You're not talking to anybody. It's really anonymous.
Absolutely.
The pills arrive at your doorstep, I'm sure, in a plain wrapper or whatever.
Right.
And you start taking them. Nobody has to know. You really have literally never interacted with another person in this whole transaction.
And not a medical professional.
Exactly. And now you've got these pills. Yeah, it's a disaster. One of the NERCS medical directors, Jessica Knox, had this to say, which is another one of the lies. We just have so much evidence that young people are having sex whether we want them to or not, she said, whether we're prepared for them to do so or not. This is so irritating. No, you know why they're having a bunch of sex? Because you're providing them with the pills. If they don't have the pills, they're actually not going to have the sex. This is one of those big culture-wide lies that I just think we should take just a moment to just focus on. Kids are not that stupid. Okay, there's a reason that premarital sex, extramarital sex, younger sex, all of that stuff exploded as soon as you got the pill, because you could do it consequence-free. Before that, what do you think happened? People didn't have as much sex because they were afraid of getting pregnant. Kids are not stupid. They understand that if there's a greater risk of me getting pregnant, there's also a greater chance I'm not going to have sex. I mean, come on. That's common sense.
Well, and this was the issue with the Health and Human Services mandate of hormonal contraception, is it went from being, there was a little bit of a barrier in trying to access it, because usually you had at least some type of copay or had to go and get the prescription. The HHS mandate made it so that there is no copay. I had fellow roommates in college, even in a small Catholic university, multiple of whom were on the pill. And, you know, maybe for other reasons at times, but, you know, my peer group were. But I can tell you something. There were times where they couldn't afford it. And the middle of our education toward the end was all of a sudden hormonal contraception was accessible for free and they could take it whenever they wanted. And let me tell you, so often, even if they're taking it for another medical reason,
right,
which it just covers up the mask of acne, it covers up the sign of horrible menstrual cramps, you know, it's covering these up, but it's exposing them to unreal levels of hormones in their bodies that treat the body in a state of pseudo pregnancy, treat the body in all of these elements. But then all of a sudden, well, I really like this guy. At least I'm on the pill. But I was talking to a Planned Parenthood worker and I remember looking at them and saying, why are you okay with going into these high schools and giving the girls hormonal contraception without helping them to recognize the risk of sexually transmitted diseases? And they're like, well, we give out free condoms too. And I said, I'm sorry, no. Any physical contact, any exchange of fluids can lead them to potentially being in harm if not a carrier or a carrier or having contracted a disease. And no one's talking to these young girls about it. And we have 17-year-olds, 8-year-olds, or 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, 20s, who will never be able to have children, who will be living and carrying these sexually transmitted diseases for years. And, you know, we wanted to bring this up because parents, your kids have access instantly to programs like the Pill Club, like Planned Parenthood, and some of their many partners that are offering constant access to the pill.
Yeah, it's very clear why they do it. More pills equals more sex equals more pregnancies equals more abortions. If you don't see those logical steps, if you think that there's a math problem there, no, that's just a simple fact. More access to contraception equals more kids having sex. More kids having sex, even with the contraception, equals more pregnancies. That's right. Just a fact. Contraception increases pregnancies. That's how the stats work. Almost, increased pregnancies, increased abortions.
Almost all of the women who would come into the crisis pregnancy center facing that challenge would have been on multiple forms. I'm not just saying one, but also often multiple forms of some type of hormonal contraception.
Now, we've talked recently, Timory, about the fact that Planned Parenthood seems to be doing a little bit more advertising on this. Like, they're popping up more and more on your Instagram feed in different places. And could it be that they're a little bit worried about that bottom line, that the money's not flowing maybe as much as it used to? And could that be because the news about the pill is actually getting out? A very interesting story in Vogue, of all places. I mean, I looked at this, Timory, and I had to look like 5 times. Is this really Vogue? This is the Vogue website.
You're like, is it spelled
right? Is this a satire site? No, Vogue UK has a very comprehensive and well-written article about why millennial women are rejecting the pill. And what they do is they go through the science.
Yeah, well, and what's interesting is it was once that the pill was a form of liberation. It allowed you to be free. And I love at one point in the article, it says you can act freely and safely for the first time ever. Is that not a lie? And you know what? These women who are part of the sexual revolution, so many of them years later now, are coming out talking about the consequences that they themselves experience. So now here's the shock. They're saying why millennial women are actually rejecting the pill, because they care about their health. They see that it's leading to, in many ways, some forms of mental illness, anxiety and depression. These kids, they're not even discussing the fact that, you know, they have the pill that's synthetic estrogen and progesterone that significantly increases the risk for depression.
There's been a lot of talk about, you know, phones and depression lately. Here's the stats on this. You're 23% more likely to have clinical depression if you're on the pill. 23% more likely, according to a recent poll that's from the Washington Post. That's not from some, you know, oh, crazy Christian website. That's the Washington Post and Vogue reporting on this.
Well, and they're not even saying 34% more likely, over 10% more likely if you're on the progesterone version of the mini pill.
Yeah.
And, you know, for a teenager, if you're talking, and we're just talking about women in general, if it's a teenager taking the pill, they're 80% more likely to experience major depression and be prescribed antidepressants. And this is, and I think that it's not only because they're having sex and they're on the pill that causes anxiety issues in the body, but because they're living a lifestyle that is truly so incredibly stressful for them.
Isn't this like the ideal situation for the pharmaceutical companies? So first, we're going to take a bunch of healthy young women. We're going to feed them the pill. And then when they get depressed, we're going to feed them the antidepressants too. It's unbelievable.
Well, and it's not healthy for them when they're actually pregnant, because we'd have the girls in the crisis pregnancy center. They're on the pill. They're on the contraception. They stop the pill while they're pregnant, but they're still on anxiety and sometimes even anxiety and depression medications at the same time. And you're going, well, and she's going, I'm stressed out. I'm not feeling good. I'm pregnant. Well, one, you're pregnant. And two, you're actually on all of this medication that's messing with your body at the same time as it's trying to care for another human being inside of you.
Yeah, there's some great stories in this Vogue piece, like Deontay, who when she was 19, she says, I started on the pill. My breasts went from a B to a D cup almost overnight. Emotionally, I was all over the place, she says. This is a very common experience. Incredible depression, mood swings, bloating, weight gain to top the list. And they also start talking about, this seemed very incongruent with the lifestyle that I'm trying to, you know, live in the rest of my life. So I'm eating very healthy, nothing right. but organic right. and all this stuff, you know, I'm counting my calories and all this. And then in the meantime, every morning or whatever, I get up and I pop these synthetic hormones that are just making me crazy.
Yes.
And they start to think, huh, well, something's not right here.
You know how many women I've spoken to who, yeah, I don't eat dairy anymore because it impacts my hormones. Are you on the pill?
You're right.
Are you on the pill still? You know, you have to ask this question.
That's a great one. It's because why do we worry about milk? My family does the same thing because they give cows synthetic hormones and we don't want those synthetic hormones in the milk. Oh, but we're just going to straight up take them like ourselves. It's craziness. Hey, before we go to this break, let me put in a quick plug for our year-end pledge drive, not only here at Trending. This is, you may not know this, but we're listener-supported. We don't talk about that often, but it's a nonprofit organization. We're funded by my 501c3, Don Johnson Ministries. And if you could help support that, I know as we get towards the year-end that a lot of people are looking at their taxes and saying, you know, where can I give? Well, you can make a tax-deductible donation to keep this program on the air. And if you did that, we would greatly appreciate it.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending.
Trending.
With Don and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
By most accounts, we are becoming a less religious society, Timmery. But I'm not so sure. And there's an interesting article in The Federalist that sort of backs up some of my concerns, because I think that even though there certainly are less people going to church, there's less people that believe in God, the stats are all quite clear on that, that we're actually still a very religious people in the sense that we take part in liturgies, we worship certain things, we take part in actions that by most sociological accounts would be considered religious. And this article by Heather Smith suggests that, in fact, there is a religious revival going on in this country, and she calls it athletica, I believe. Sports. She's like, we're worshiping sports. What are your thoughts on this?
You know, as soon as I saw this, I'm like, oh, I wonder what athletica is. And I'm sitting here like reading and I go, oh, this is so true. Because you know what? And it's interesting because I come from a dancing background. I come from a background of truly practicing something religiously. And I remember always kind of hearing the words, you know, if you want to do this, you have to, you know, really work at it religiously. And I remember, you know, growing up, because I came from a Catholic home, well, I can't believe they're using that word referring to this. And I remember having at one point to kind of stop. What do they mean by practicing religiously? You know, regularly devoting your whole being to this. This is what people are doing with sports. And now for me, dance helped me to learn discipline, to learn obedience, to learn, you know, sacrifice, to learn the challenges, things
which,
don't always
which a lot of other sports do as well, I think.
And it brought me to be, I think, a stronger Catholic. And so I think that when we hear this, I think the same can be said about any of the sports that we're talking about. But the thing is that the attitude we've created with sports, you know, people are spending more time on sports. They're more devoted on Sundays, Saturdays, Mondays, every single day of the week. You know, they don't miss a single extra practice. They don't, you know, mind adding additional things on to make them the best at what they do. They do the team building programs. They're doing everything they can to make that player the best possible player. But are we focusing more on being the best possible player or being the best possible follower of our Lord?
Yeah, well, if you look at the stats, the player seems to come up more. Yeah, because right. You think about, well, you're right. How do you practice a religion? Well, what do you invest your time and your money in? That's what you ascribe the most worth to. Right. And certainly we spend a lot of time and a lot of money either going to sports ourselves as fans, you know, those games, or taking our kids around to sports every single day. A lot of sports, they practice daily, and you're up at 5 a.m. and you're at the gym, and you know, you're doing all these things. So you have that sort of sacrificial worship aspect of it that I see. There's also a communal aspect of these sporting things where you are part of a tribe and you're all gathered around this one thing. And within that tribe, there are certain exalted people that you sort of like esteem, and you aspire to be those sort of saintly kind of people, right? And there's usually some sort of authoritative text within these things where there's certainly rules, but I think of even like, well, if we're going to be we're going to coach like John Madden or whatever it is, you know, we have these different philosophies and different denominations within the sports. And there's a book by James Smith, I think is his name, about secular liturgies. And he had some good insight into this, I thought. He said, if you want to know what kind of liturgy you practice, think about what kind of special days do you have and what kind of clothes do you wear on those special days? And do you get together with family on those special days? And, you know, traditionally church, you have special clothes for church. You have a special place to go for church. And everybody sets aside everything else. You know, we're not going to schedule anything else on that day because it's church day. But you think about what happens on a typical, if you're a college football family or maybe you're an NFL family and you're really big fans, what happens on those particular days? Everybody gets up and you get all geared up in your particular outfit. You know, you have special clothes to wear that day. Everybody's got their jersey on. And you don't schedule anything else that day because, hey, we're going to get together and we're going to barbecue. We're going to have special food. Right, special food that day, some hamburgers, some steaks, like you would at a divine type event like church used to be. And you are going to make sure that the time and the money gets spent on those liturgies, right? And if you want to raise up a kid in those liturgies, it's not like the kid makes a choice. The kid just gets raised up. Like, the kid knows. If you want to make a kid a fan of your team, how does that happen? Do you, drill it into his head every day? All right, let's once a week we get together and you say these things, I believe in the Green Bay Packers or whatever. No, you don't. You get him when he's still in the crib, the Green Bay Packers onesie.
Right.
You know, and
you teach him the rules of the game.
But
you teach him how to root for the game.
Yeah, he imbibes. The kids imbibe what the parents worship, mm-hmm. right? It's not that he has to be taught explicitly, although they certainly will be taught. You know, when they have questions, let me tell you the rules. You know, what happened there? That was offside or whatever.
Right.
But I think that they know what's important to you as a parent because of how
we treat the
how
thing.
We live.
Well, and if you think about it, if we are more often getting dressed up, making more of an effort to wake up early, making more of an effort to stay up later and sacrifice staying up for the sport, then when it comes to Sunday, it's one thing. I get people needing to sleep in, but if that's not the priority, if we're not willing to make as much effort of making sacrifices to showing up early to church, spending time praying after Mass, spending time in adoration, spending these elements, the kids see, based on our example, what really matters to them is the sport. And that's where I bond. That's where I find excitement, joy. That's where I take my passion.
That's an important point. So what makes you very animated? What makes you very happy? What makes you very sad? Often, I suspect, for many of us, it's how our team did that weekend, right? Like, your whole life is bound up in how that team did. And what about the kingdom of God, right? Like, what developments in the kingdom of God happened this week that made you fired up or got you upset? Anything, right? Politics, maybe. Politics, I can see that. But anything within the kingdom of God where you said, you know what, man, people are really missing out on that relationship with Jesus, and I'm giving my life to make sure that other people have that relationship with Jesus. And we have just as much passion as a family to make sure that you are aligning your life with what's ultimately important, and that's the church, right? I mean, frankly, maybe as a church we could learn a few things from sports and how that is, but maybe we'll talk about that in a second. But on the other hand, as families, we've got to have our priorities straight, saying what ultimately is important in my life. And when my kids look at me and what makes me upset or not, is it sports really? Is it my work? Or is it God? Like, is that what's animating me? And I I don't know. I think we could. A lot of times we're, you're stumbling into mass and you're in your shorts and your t-shirt that looks like you slept. I don't want to be too judgmental, but it is an attitude we take.
Yeah. We go very nonchalantly in toward the church. And I remember in college, we had this incredible priest. His name was Father Timon. And he would tell us, you do not have to go to mass. You get to go to mass and you do not attend mass. You pray the mass. And there's a reason that we are going in with this nonchalant attitude. We don't care. It's not a big deal. And we show up when we think that's our participation. But you know what? Quite frankly, you see people at church and they look bored a lot of the time. And I think it's because they don't care when they show up. They don't make the effort to prepare themselves to attend mass. They don't make the effort to tell them, you know, I'm actually going to change the way I dress for Sunday mass, acknowledging where I'm at. Because just like when you go to the ballet, when you go to a sports event, when you go to a symphony, when wedding, you go to the beach, you dress a certain way based on where you're going to honor or relax within the occasion. And I think the attitude and the clothing and the preparation in advance alters. And, you know, we're willing to wake up at 5 a.m., 6 a.m. for a sports team, but we're not willing to do these things for church, to make the extra sacrifices. And so, you know, maybe you're someone who's feeling like, oh man, like feeling a little frustrated. You maybe feel a little guilty. You know, sometimes our guilt at times is saying, okay, deal with it, face it, and make better choices.
Yeah. On the flip side, let me just throw on the flip side there. I think church leadership in general could also take a few lessons from this. Like, you know what I mean? If you're in leadership and, you know, you present this aura like, yeah, we're going through the motions here. Right. You know, like I'm not excited about this homily and I'm not, it's like we get the vibe from church like, yeah, do you even think I should be here? You know, like, do you think that these rules are important? Do you see the beauty and the joy of the Catholic Church? Or are you trying to explain it away too? Like, all right, yeah, we all understand that this, you know, we're going to get you out of here in time to go see that football game. Don't worry, right? That sort of attitude. You know, sometimes I feel like, yeah, maybe we could adjust how we present to the church and what we think about the church. And I mean, I put myself in this role. I'm not talking about just clergy here. I'm talking about lay people who are, and we all should be in some sort of, like lay leadership in the church, right? How is that being presented to the culture? And are we not excited about it? And if so, why not?
Right. Well, and someone recently asked me, you know, how do I live my young adult years right now? You know, I'm frustrated. I want to marry someone. I'm not meeting anyone. And I said, what matters is that you're living a virtuous life. You're growing closer to our Lord. And you can still have fun. You can still enjoy life. And I think that we need to take that attitude to everything. It's okay. It's good to have fun. It's okay and good to enjoy things. You know, we're supposed to glorify God by participating in culture and worship and arts and all of these different opportunities we have, but having good, clean fun. There's nothing wrong with that. And I think that sometimes we talk about Catholicism and people think, oh, to be Catholic is to be boring, is to lose my personality. But you're called to be you and enjoy and love the gifts you have and, you know, participate in the things you're passionate about still.
Yeah, it actually perfects your personality, right?
Yes.
Like grace perfects nature. And so who you are will only get better as you get closer and closer to Jesus in his church.
From the studios of Relevant Radio, this has been Trending with Dawn and Timmery. Trending. To learn more about Dawn Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit dawnjohnsonministries.org or timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.